not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is the best of Tech Talk. Dr. Schertz remains away on business this weekend, but Jim Russ sitting in for him again today. And again, we will have all the stuff you expect from Tech Talk, starting right now with a dive into the mailbag.
It is time for...
There's a letter in your
mailbox.
Oh,
yes.
There he is.
Yes, indeed. We have a letter from Nikita. Dear Dr. Schertz, I have a service and I want to post an ad about it on Craigslist.
Uh-oh.
In the old days, you just posted it. Now Craigslist requires a phone verification.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they only require it in the services section, by the way. You can post... You can sell your pickup truck, and then you don't have to have a phone verification. But in the case of services, you have to have a phone verification. Now, so I go to the page and I put in my phone number. The system says they'll have to contact me to verify, but I'm never contacted. Then I find out why they can't verify a voice over IP phone number. I've written to Craigslist and have not gotten any reply. I also called them last week with no answer. On their phone. Do you know what I can do to work around or resolve this? Well, I did check with Craigslist. If you're on the services section, there is no way to get around phone verification.
Why is that? Because of all the trouble they've been having with...
And it's because of spam going on there. Mm-hmm. And, there were like garbage ads put up there. And also all the adult ads, which were going in the services section they're trying to target. But it was broader than that. But they actually don't have to look up your phone number in a phone book. They just call you. And what they do is you give them the phone number. They call you. And when you answer it, they will provide you with some authentication information by phone. Then you log back into the website, the Craigslist website, and provide the authentication information that they provided you by phone. So they actually don't have to look up your phone number. I checked around, and I don't see any reason why your voice over IP phone would not work. They'll even take a cell phone, and cell phones are not even in listed in phone books. So, when I was checking around Craigslist, I also noticed that
a lot of tall blondes.
If anybody had a problem with them, they could never get through. Nobody could ever get through.
Why do they require you to do this, and then you can't get in touch with them?
And then you can't get through. So I would think that you would want to enter it in again and make certain it's the right phone number. I think that's the only – I don't have any other better suggestion. Now, I will say, I also have voice over IP phone at home, and I did not want to give up my landline when I got it. I got UMA. So I took my landline phone number and I ported it over to UMA. Now, because I had been in the Verizon system for like 20 years, my phone number, if they do any reverse lookups, it shows up right there. So so anybody can track that down. And so I wanted to keep that phone number since I'd had it for so many years. You could probably also, if you'd ever had a landline in the past, you could transport it, if it's still available, to your voice over IP number. Mm-hmm. It cost me $35 to do that. But I looked all over the Craigslist site, Nikita. I could not really find a solution. There are workarounds if you're in the non-services section, but if you're in services, they are clamping that down.
Really?
It could just be that they didn't get to you because of the big load. Or maybe they called you and you didn't answer the phone when you were there because I don't necessarily think they're going to leave a message. I'll keep checking on that, see if I can get any other better information, but that's the best information I have at the moment.
Interesting.
We have an email from Andrew. Dear Tech Talk, when I delete stuff out of my recycle bin and go find it, I would like to go find it, and I want to make certain that it's not available. How can I do what's called a DOD wipe to remove all evidence that another existed? Also, what happens if I delete stuff in my emails? Where does this go, and how can it be deleted? If not, how can I delete it permanently? Sometimes I have to download and print bank statements and other documents, and I just don't want those around after I'm done with them. That's the premise of the question. Thanks, mm-hmm. Andrew. Well, let's talk about this DOD wipe first, and we'll address what's called secure delete. Okay, when you delete a file on your hard drive, first of all, it goes into the recycle bin. So it's really there. Then if you want to delete it as far as your operating system is concerned, then you go to the recycle bin and delete it from the recycle bin. And then it's not stored anywhere. When you actually completely delete a system from the operating system so it thinks the file's not there, it simply removes the reference to it in the lookup table.
Okay.
It actually doesn't delete the data that was on the hard drive. That's why there are programs that allow you to go back and undelete files. You simply restore the file name in the lookup table. It references the same space. And if another file hasn't overwritten it, bingo, you've got it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the current hard drives work, they always go to the high watermark, which means if you delete a file here, it's going to write your next file at the next level, at the highest address in the hard drive, so it doesn't go in and backfill. So since they always write new data after the high watermark in the hard drive, chances are that your file could sit there, the data for your file could sit there for a long time, even though you've deleted it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd like to get rid of it. So what you have to do is basically you have to go in and all the freed areas on the hard drive, you've got to basically wipe them clean and then wipe them again. If you want to do up the DOD specs of that, you have to keep rewiping it about 4 or 5 times so that there's no magnetic residual. Fortunately, there is a program to do that. It's called S-Delete. Of course, that would stand for Secure Delete.
Okay.
S-Delete version 1.51. It's available from Sys Internals, which was a company that wrote all sorts of utilities for Microsoft Windows. And then Microsoft bought them because they were so good. So Sys Internals is now owned by Microsoft. So you can simply Google S-Delete, and it'll take you right to the Microsoft TechNet address for S-Delete. You can download it, and it will go in, and it will wipe all of the deleted files so they cannot be recovered, and that could then do a secure delete. Now let's talk about emails. That's another issue.
Okay.
Okay, and they're basically two different kinds of email. Of course, you've got web-based email and PC-based email. In the case of web-based email, if you delete a web-based email, it's not on your hard drive. It's on it's on Google's hard drive,
right,
or it's on Gmail's hard on Hotmail's hard drive. So when you delete it there, it's on a server. Chances are it's been backed up. But since there's so much activity on those servers, it's probably going to be overwritten on the actual active hard drive that's running. It's unlikely that anybody's going to be able to go in and actually reclaim that email from the backup data unless they have a court order. So I think it's pretty secure once it's there.
You know, it's an interesting question because I deleted some stuff out of my Gmail account that I'd really like to get back. I forgot.
Uh-huh.
And you look at the they have a page on Gmail about frequently asked questions. You can't get it back.
You can't get it back. On the other hand, if you would file a lawsuit against Google, they do back up their servers.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably do have backups back for a certain time period. And then they rotate the storage media. So
you'd have to get a court order to do this?
Because they're not going to do it voluntarily. It's very expensive to go in and actually find the system and restore it. It's an expensive ordeal. And people have actually taken them to court when there was certain data that was required for evidence.
A court case,
and then they can go back and get it. But I wouldn't count on it. Now, the place it could be stored that people could get it would be in your browser cache. Because you're basically have a website, and your browser cache stores all the web pages that you look at.
Right.
So the emails that you've deleted could be in your browser cache.
Unless, of course, you delete your history.
No. History is not browser cache.
Okay.
History is just a list of all the websites you've been at.
Interesting.
The browser cache stores all the web pages you look at, so that if you go back to the same web page, you pull it out of cache instead of out of the internet, and it makes your computer seem faster. So if you want to make certain that no image of that email is on your computer, you want to go in and clear the cache.
How do you get to the browser cache?
You go to options, and then you go to security. Under options, security, and then they've got clear browser cache. Let me see here. And so I go to tools, then I go to internet. This is Internet Explorer. Go to tools, internet option, and then under under content. You can, Content Advisor, Privacy. I don't see where you do the clear the cache here. Oh, yeah, here we go. Browser History, Cookies, Passwords, and Other Web Form Information. You can actually, under Browsing, they call it Browsing History. It actually includes the temporary internet files.
Interesting.
Yeah, if you click on Browser History, they have temporary internet files, and that is where that is the cache.
But you could also go in and reclaim stuff that way.
Yeah, you could.
By getting into the browser cache.
You could reclaim stuff that way. Now, on the other hand, if it's an email which is PC-based, now that could be like Outlook, Outlook Express, Thunderbird, where you actually download emails to your computer, and you delete an email, and you want to be sure that it's gone. Okay, there are two kinds of ways that emails are stored. One is called the aggregate data store, where all the emails are in one giant file. So if you delete an email, you just basically delete a reference to that email in the file, but you don't delete the data. The data is not deleted until you do compact the file, until you do data compaction, and that eliminates all the deleted records. Until you compact that aggregated file, it's still there. So if you want to make certain it's not, if you've got Outlook Express, for instance, Outlook or Thunderbird, it's using aggregate data store, you can go in there and there's a button that says compact the file, and it will compact the file and it gets rid of all the deleted files. Until you compact it, it's still there. Now, if you have individual data stores where every email is a separate file, that would be done like Windows Live Mail, then you have to delete that file. But then, of course, you've got the problem that it's still on the hard drive. So then you've got to do a secure delete to get rid of all reference to it. And if you handle all of those things, you can securely delete whatever you're trying to hide.
We hope you're not trying to hide something. We're not trying to hide from you. This is the Best of Tech Talk. It's Saturday morning on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. More from the Best of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford
University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. Dr. Schertz away today on business. Jim Russ sitting in for him. Now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yeah, us. And today we are going to be talking about Philip Rosedale.
Mm-hmm.
Philip Rosedale is best known as the creator of the virtual world Second Life. Some people call it, instead of virtual, they call it a metaverse. Instead of universe, you know, like metaphysics, beyond physics, beyond the universe, metaverse. Within Second Life, his avatar is known as Philip Linden.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to look at Second Life as we're talking, just go to secondlife.com, and you'll see a lot of scenes from Second Life. It actually is a whole world. The graphics look really nice. Philip Rosedale was born September 29th, 1968. In San Diego, California. His mom was an English teacher, and his dad was a Navy carrier pilot. Rosedale was left-handed. I only brought that on because I'm
left-handed. Because you are.
Because I'm left-handed. He was a creative kid who wanted to know how things work. Like, he liked the electronics project. He built a music synthesizer. In middle school, his parents bought him an Apple IIe.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a little graphics program that made trees grow on the screen. And that's when he realized that he could simulate nature.
Wow.
He was already at age 17 thinking virtual world. He started his own company selling database systems to small businesses at age 17. Now, that's actually pretty advanced, isn't it? Selling database system. He used the proceeds to fund his college education and ultimately earned, get this, it's the other reason I like him, a bachelor's degree in physics. He's a left-handed physicist.
What
could be better?
I don't know, but I went to the website, and this is like within the first 2 seconds they show people kissing on the Eiffel Tower. And people romping in these beautiful gardens, and I can't figure out my own life, let alone manage a Second Life. This is too funny.
He got a BS in physics from the University of California,
yes,
San Diego.
Did.
In 1995, he moved to San Francisco and started an innovative internet video conferencing company called Freeview, F-R-E-V-U-E. Now, to look up the Freeview website, it's archived. It's no longer live. Now, Freeview produced streaming video, and it was such a good technology that he invented that it was purchased by Real Networks, which is the streaming audio and then streaming video.
Mm-hmm.
So he made good money. Now, that was when he sold it to Real Networks. Now, he was born 68, 78, 88. So when he was 28 years old, he hit it big with selling, but Freeview. Now, that was a private sale. I could not find anywhere how much the sale was.
It had to be a good chunk of change.
Now, he was actually then hired by Real Networks, and he became vice president in 1996 and chief technology officer for Real Networks at age 28. Quite precocious. Now, around the same time, his wife gave him a book that inspired him. It was Neal Stephenson's science fiction classic, Snow Crash. Now, it had described two worlds, the real world and the global online metaverse. And this is where he got the idea.
Mm-hmm.
That you could have a second life. Now, he thought the metaverse was going to happen, but we didn't have advanced enough technology at that time. People still had dial-up. The graphics on the computers wasn't very good. So he said, well, I'll work on my metaverse later on once the technology catches up. So he put that on the back burner. Now, in 1999, about 3 years later, after he read the book, NVIDIA released its GeForce 2 graphics card. Now, this was a hot graphics card that had a graphics processor on it, and it gave real graphics power to just a regular computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden now there was a steep acceleration in the graphics capability of home machines. Now, in addition, there was the penetration of broadband. So with the improved graphics and the improved bandwidth on the Internet, he thought, now, this is the time for my metaverse. Now, that same year, Rosedale attended Burning Man. You ever heard of Burning Man? It's that.
Yes.
It's that desert. That annual meet in the desert where all the hippies get out there and
exactly
and go wild. And they actually have different characters. They dress in different ways. They create a whole ecosystem there, including free Wi-Fi and everything.
And, cool. I'm in.
And so, you know, he went out to Burning Man. Some of the I've never been there, but it looks like they have quite a good time there.
Mm-hmm.
So when he came back from Burning Man, he thought this would be the perfect template for his online world where people could be anything they wanted to be. See, you go to Burning Man and you just, I mean, maybe you're like a stiff businessman, and then you go to Burning Man, and you just You loosen up, do whatever you want,
dress
in a different way. So
cool.
So there
it's
you go.
It's kind of let it all hang out, as they
let
say.
Let it all hang out. So he wanted his metaverse, or his second life, he didn't call it Second Life then, to sort of be like Burning Tree. So that was the inspiration. Now, with that inspiration in mind, in 1999, Rosedale left his job at Real Networks with the money that he had from selling Freeview. And then he met a guy who was a venture capitalist, Mitch Kapoor. Now, Mitch Kapoor was founder of Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have heard of him
earlier.
You may have
heard of Lotus.
So with money from Mitch and with the money that he got for selling Freeview, he started Linden Lab, which is the name of his company, Linden Lab Incorporated. It was named for the street where the company first had its offices,
mm-hmm,
in Hayes Valley on Linden Street. So it's Linden Lab. Now, in addition to Kapoor, some other big names really backed this thing. Say, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos is one of the backers. So you know Amazon's going to have a Second Life store.
Yeah, absolutely.
eBay founder Pierre Odemeyer is also one of the backers. So I'm certain eBay is going to have a Second Life outlet. So most see Second Life as an alternative existence built by residents that strives to be better than the physical world. Basically, you go, it's a world when you join Second Life, you get a plot of land, you build a house, you get a job, you create a life within Second World, and you can work and earn money. You can get a job within Second Life, you earn money. You know, these are all Linden dollars,
uh-huh,
that you earn.
Linden dollars.
And they've actually calculated the GDP, gross domestic product for Second Life. They've calculated the inflation rate for Second Life, and it turns out because every time somebody joins, they create land. There's no supply and demand pressure,
mm-hmm,
because land
goes up. Infinite amount of it, right?
Yeah, and so there's no supply and demand, and so the inflation in Second Life is about zero. But they have all these economic parameters on the thing, and actually people get quite involved with this whole deal. But there's a second element to Second Life that actually is the most powerful element, and this thing of this virtual reality that you're building, that's one thing. But this way of interacting with other people is actually could revolutionize the internet. Second Life makes the internet people-centric rather than net-centric. Now, let me explain why this could really change the way you did business. Mm-hmm. Right now, if you go to Amazon, it's just you looking around to Amazon. There's no other people there. You know, it's just you and your computer. You don't interact with anybody else in particular. But if you would use Second Life and go into the Amazon store, your avatar would, you know, walk into the Amazon store. Then you would go to, suppose you're interested in cooking, you would then walk over to the section where they had all the cookbooks, and you would see all these shelves with cookbooks, and you could pull out a book and look at it. But while you're looking at the shelves, there would be other avatars around you who are also interested in cooking, and they'd be looking at cookbooks. And then you'd say, you know, I'm looking for a good recipe for spaghetti. And you talk to the person next to you, and they'd say, yeah, that's, you know, I'm interested in that. And they'd say, here's a really a good book. And all of a sudden, you could have this interaction like you're at a real bookstore.
So Second Life kind of becomes your first life, because
yeah,
you might actually get an actual recipe that you could use here on this actual planet.
You could.
Okay, my brain's going to explode.
So
this is way too much.
No, so you see what we are talking about a different paradigm. Instead of the flat browser,
mm-hmm.
the Second Life interface becomes the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you do on the internet is through that interface. So if somebody puts up an online store, they actually build a store in Second Life. Or if you go to an online classroom, for instance, there are colleges that are building online classrooms. You actually log on to Second Life, and you walk into your classroom.
And sit down.
And all the other people in class are there.
Oh,
and
this
you
is
can,
crazy.
And you can hold up your hand. You can say something. The teacher can say something.
It's too early on Saturday morning to think, okay, I'm not really there, but I'm there.
You know, so this, let me tell you, for instance, former Governor Mark Warner, when he thought he might be running for president, decided mm-hmm. to make a whistle stop tour in Second Life. So Mark Warner had an avatar, and he went all around Second Life on a whistle stop tour making political speeches.
It's cheaper than actually getting a train, right?
Yeah. No, but see, the thing is, here's another thing. IBM is using Second Life to hold meetings.
Huh.
So people from IBM, from all around the world, they log on, and they all go into the meeting room, and they sit there. People hold up their hand, and they talk, and they look at each other's avatar. And what they have said is, this is actually more engaging than video conferencing.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because you're actually, and so if somebody wants to show a piece of paper, their avatar does it. And so we are talking about a paradigm shift that transcends the game, Second mm-hmm. Life, you mm-hmm. see, where you're building a virtual reality. So when you talk to Philip Rosedale, he's saying, no, I'm not building a game. I'm building a new internet. I'm reinventing the internet. And so the people that are backing it are saying that this could become as big as when the browser finally connected. See, the browser connected graphics with text. So all of a sudden you could see well laid out things. And so this would be something as revolutionary as that.
So when you create your own avatar, you can create what it looks like.
Yeah.
So you can make it look like you.
Or not. Like, for instance, I
you could then look like Angie Dickinson or something.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. His avatar is Philip Linden. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to. So he spoke. He gave the keynote address at the Second Life conference, and so I wanted to hear him speak. So last night I was listening to his keynote address. It wasn't him. It was his avatar. And he was being interviewed by a reporter. It wasn't her. It was her avatar. And this reporter, I mean, that avatar was hot.
I don't want to know what she had. The doc is now speechless.
So I listened to his avatar, and I've now listened to like three of Philip Rosedale's speeches, and it's only his avatar.
You skip right ahead to the press conference to check out the reporters is what you do.
No, I couldn't help it. Well, you know.
Marianne's still in China?
I know. She's gone. She's still in China.
I could have guessed.
So this is the What happened was, back in October of 2009, he announced his new project. He temporarily left Second Life because he had hired a new team to put it in place, and he started his new project, which I'm going to talk about a little later.
No, boy.
The Love Machine.
Yeah.
And so I'll talk about that a little later. And then he's worked on that. And the reason I brought him up because just a week ago he announced he's coming back to Second Life
mm-hmm.
because the guy that he put in charge doubles the number of employees, and they had a lot of technical snafus.
Yeah.
They were running negative cash flow.
You can't trust anyone to run it.
So now he's back trying to get the ship afloat again.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing he did, he said, look, if we want to transform the internet, we have to make Second Life a platform, much like Amazon became a platform for resellers. So now he's released much of the APIs and code interface to make Second Life a platform so that stores can hook into it, or anybody can hook into it. So That's all you pretty much wanted to know about Philip Rosedale, but later in the show, we're going to talk about his other company.
Exactly. Now, see, I think what we should do is we should come up with Tech Talk on Second Life.
Well, we should.
That might be a problem. You're listening to Tech Talk, the best of version, here on one of these fine broadcast radio stations, WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, and WTOP FM HD2 Washington. We'll have more. Hope you're paying attention to profiles in IT because your chance at free food is next here on the best of Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, five of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here. This is where I talk. I am that guy right here. And my name is Jim Ross, sitting in for Dr. Richard Church today, who is away on business. But we are about to take care of business here by asking you to answer one question based on the Profile in IT segment we just brought to you about Philip Rosedale. In 1999, while he was employed by Real Networks as the chief technology officer, Philip Rosedale attended an event. This is in 1999. It inspired him to create this online world we were just talking about, Second Life. What was the name of that event? If you can answer that question right now, call me, 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, the number to call to answer the pop quiz is 877-936-9333. Now more of the best of Tech Talk.
We're going to talk about the company that Philip Rosedale started when he left Second Life for a while, the Love Machine.
Oh, should I get this music
yes.
ready?
Yes. Yeah, let's go. Oh,
our cheesy porn music.
Yeah, there we go. Well, you know, he left Second Life to start the Love Machine. Now, what is this? It's actually a crowd-sourced review and bonus system.
Huh? What does that mean?
Okay, have you ever heard of, like, these 360 reviews where everybody, you know, your peers review you, your subordinates review you, your bosses review you from all directions?
Oh, this sounds like a whole lot of fun.
And so what happens is that this is a crowd-sourced review where anybody can review anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so you basically, if somebody comes in and does really, hey, they, you know, they came in and they fixed the console for you and it really wasn't their job, but they did it, you give them a little nice review.
Guess what? That didn't happen today.
Yeah, that's what it was. See, that's what didn't happen. So maybe. And so what happens is that over time, people collect good reviews or bad reviews or no reviews. And over time, you can look at the distribution of these reviews and you can see which people actually are contributing more to the life and the progress of the company by virtue of their peer reviews. And so this is how it works. All employees using email or a web page can send short messages recognizing anyone else for any reason. Now, everyone can see the content of all messages, as well as the various statistical summaries. The performance review consists of selecting those messages from others that you feel best represent you. So you can sell, you select the ones that you think represent you. Employees are empowered, actually, to give away bonuses to each other. So there's a bonus pool, and the employees collectively distribute the bonus pool.
Interesting.
I mean, you know, actually, there's a lot of merit to this, really, start looking at it. Now, why does it work? Okay, the basic unit of review, love, can be collected in less than 10 seconds. Fun to do. So they call a good review love. So this is why it's called the love machine.
The love machine. And so not exactly what we thought, but it is a way of getting
some love. Exactly what you thought, Jim.
Well, my mind
is just not that far down in the gutter.
No, you're just checking out virtual news reporters on the web, that's all. No, not you.
So, the collective opinion of everyone...
Is this the first fight we've ever had on the air?
I know it is. Now, the collective opinion of everyone, of the whole company, is really probably a higher quality review than just your supervisor would give you, because it has an input from everybody. Now, this also empowers employees to evaluate and give bonuses to the other and creates a culture of trust and greater benefits for the whole company. Now... So this is actually, they actually are beta testing the love machine now with selected companies. I think this is kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah, it sure is.
Now, the way he's actually developing the software is interesting. He's doing it almost like Second Life. You actually don't even interview to do work there. Mm-hmm. You can just show up, say you'd like to join the team, you sign up on the work list, and then you go in and see what kind of programming tasks there are to do. And then you bid on a job. And then once you bid on a job, you enter the workroom and collaborate with other people, sort of like a Second Life, only they have a chat board. And then you talk to the other team members, you work on your project and turn it in. So people from anywhere in the world can contribute to the software, and they end up self-selecting a team of people that actually are writing good code and doing a good job. And so they've come up with a whole beta thing on this, using essentially the Second Life metaphor for creating a software team. And so even the company itself is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just check out lovemachineinc.com is the website.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Now, I think if you go to lovemachine.com, you might get something different. I actually don't know what that would be, Jim.
I like the way you say that, because it sounds like perhaps you've been there.
No, not me.
No, you've been to virtualnewsreporter.com.
So you want to go to lovemachineinc.com, lovemachineinc.com to get it. Now, while I was actually doing this thing, I learned something else, and so this became the website of the week. The logo for the Love Machine was developed through an interactive site where you have people bid on it. And if you want to get logos designed or design work done, there's another website that uses crowdsourcing. It's called 99designs.com. So you go to www.99designs.com. And then what you do is, and I went there and looked around, and the logo for the Love Machine was designed on 99designs.com.
Mm-hmm.
What they did interesting, they said that when they wanted to get a logo built, they wrote this story and said that they were a rock band. And the name of the band was the Love Machine, and they were trying to get a logo for the band. And so they put this job up on 99designs.com, and you just say, okay, I'll pay $500 for the winning design. You put up the task on there, and then people start working on it. And I was noticing some of the jobs that if the jobs pay more than $500, typically 25 people are working on the design. So, and they all are submitting ideas to you, and then you give feedback. You say, no, this is a little bit, you feedback, and you give them up and down votes, you know, and you give them feedback as they're developing it. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, one of the 25 is going to get just the perfect logo for you. And then when you say, that's it, I like it, you pay him the $500.
Wow.
And the other guys just go on their way. it's actually kind of a clever way to do design work.
That is a good idea.
So this is, and so that's actually my website of the week, and I sort of stumbled into that
because of the Love Machine.
Because of the Love Machine, and all of these things are all crowdsourcing and mm-hmm. people intensive, mm-hmm. which is the same, you know, the principles of Second Life. And so you would expect him to be using something like that. So there you go. There's the website of the week, www.99designs.com. And then, of course, the Love Machine, which mm-hmm. is a great crowdsourcing, evaluation, and bonus tool.
You are listening to the best of Tech Talk. Heard locally on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. More from the virtual classroom coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is a quality educational experience, otherwise known as Tech Talk. Today we're in best of mode because Dr. Schertz is away on business. He will return and we will have a live show next Saturday, the 25th of September. But right now, we've got one of my all-time favorite discussions on Tech Talk. That is of string theory.
I went to a very interesting seminar that was at the Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian, and it was a debate on string theory.
I'm much more familiar with string cheese.
Yeah.
Please do explain.
String theory is a theory that's been around for actually 37 years, and it's designed to basically unify the underpinnings of physics. See, there's a little-known secret that physicists have been trying to keep out of the press. But physics really isn't that unified. You've got the physics of the very small, which is quantum mechanics. It talks about atoms, things that are very tiny. And it talks about the forces that deal with the very small, electromagnetic forces. In fact, if it weren't for electromagnetic forces, there would be no radio. It also deals with nuclear forces, strong nuclear force, weak nuclear force. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the very big. This is the cosmos, the cosmology, the universe, planets circling around. And that's described by general relativity, Einstein's general relativity.
So string theory weaves all of this together.
It brings it together. Here's the problem. General relativity works great when you talk about big things. Quantum mechanics works great when you talk about small things. But when you go to what they call singularities in the universe, a singularity is when everything goes down to a point, like in a black hole where a planet just collapses under its own weight to a point, or at the initial starting point of the universe, the Big Bang, where everything was at a point, now you've got everything in one place, the big and the small, the big masses in the small space, and you have to have both quantum mechanics and general relativity happily coexisting together to get reasonable predictions. And what happens? They don't. So we don't understand the very beginning at the Big Bang. We don't understand what's happening at the in a black hole, and we're trying to unify this. So somebody came up with the idea of string theory, where you take particles and you say that they are small filaments of vibrating energy, little loops of vibrating energy. And you take a loop of string, it can have different wave patterns on it. So one wave pattern might correspond to an electron. Another wave pattern might correspond to a photon. So different standing waves on the string correspond to different particles. And what happened was, string theory could predict all of the particles that you know in quantum mechanics, and it predicted an additional one called the graviton. The graviton is the fundamental unit of gravity. So now you've got one theory that actually can handle both extremes of physics. And so people in string theory were really excited about it.
Do we just get a PhD for listening to that?
You did.
Wow.
That's
you know, on Sunday mornings when I open up the outline and I see string theory at the top, smoke starts pouring out from
now,
under
see,
my
usually
head.
When
burning up brain cells.
See, usually when you're listening to radio, the announcer has gravitas. But we're talking about graviton, not gravitas. So let's keep that straight here. Now, here's the problem. A lot of people think string theory is totally wacky because in order to make it work, they had to invent extra dimensions. You know, we're familiar with four dimensions, the three spatial dimensions plus time, four dimensions. Well, to make string theory work, they need 10 dimensions or 11. And so you've got basically 10-dimensional surfaces called banes floating around in an 11-dimensional space. And so a lot of physicists are saying, hey, this is just wacky how to have, because these dimensions are folding back on themselves. And they try to do a calculation with string theory.
What do they call it again? What was the word you just said?
Banes.
B-A-E-N-S?
B-A-N-E-S. Banes. Like membranes.
Okay. Oh, I got you. Okay.
And so brains, they're called brains, B-R-A-N-S, membranes. Yeah. And the problem is how these hidden dimensions, how these extra dimensions fold back on themselves because they don't expand out, it dramatically changes the answers you get. So the people that say, hey, you can't test string theory, and so they have a new result for string theory to predict, the string theorists just go back and they just fold the hidden dimensions up in a different way and they get a different answer. So it's almost like you can predict anything with it.
So what are you doing with this at Stratford University?
We're not doing anything with string
theory. Okay,
I'm glad I asked. I just love this thing.
You just love this. So now, tell us, Naveed and I were talking about this seminar that you went to. Were the guys there with the, the place was sold out.
I went to this thing. I thought this place would just be 50 people would be there. It was the Baird Auditorium. It was sold out. There were people there begging to get in. I couldn't imagine it. I mean,
so there were ticket scalpers outside.
Yeah, there were ticket scalpers.
Were the guys that had their chest painted with string theory
and body paint?
there were a lot of about half the audience looked like, you know, former hippies that had gone into theoretical physics, but it was a mixture of retired residents, associates, students, and professors, and it was just an interesting group. Well, you have to validate string theory. The problem: strings are too small to see, and so Brian Greene said there are three experiments that might possibly validate whether string theory makes sense. One experiment involves looking at the radiation in the universe. And so at the Big Bang itself, of course, the impact of the extra dimensions would be obvious. And if you then expand, let the universe expand, and you look at the distribution of background radiation in the universe, the shape of the hidden dimensions will affect that distribution. So there's a satellite being launched by the European Union called the Planck satellite that may be able to measure that, and they may be able to infer the hidden dimensions with that experiment. There's a second experiment in the old Hadron accelerator that they're putting up at CERN where they might be able to see resonant frequencies of the strings. And the third one would be an energy leakage experiment where they bang two particles together, and if some energy disappears because it leaks into the hidden dimensions, it would be evidence of hidden dimensions. So there are three indirect experiments. The people that don't like string theory say, look, it's no better than a religion because you can't validate it, you can't see it. It looks like a mathematical trick, and so it's a sort of an emotional kind of debate going on here. But it was really an interesting thing. If you want to find out about string theory, Brian Greene, who wrote The Elegant Universe, did a PBS special, and you can go just put up The Elegant Universe PBS. You can go to it, And at that page, they have 3 hours of a string theory presentation by Brian Greene that's just excellent.
This is the Best of Tech Talk on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. You can learn more about this particular radio show by going to our website, techtalkonline.com. There you can send us an email, which is our preferred method of getting a question to Dr. Schertz. You can also look at previous show outlines, and you can also listen to them online. Stand by. More of the Best of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. Dr. Richard Schertz away today. This is Jim Russ sitting in for him on the Best of Tech Talk.
You know, the problem about getting a job, this is what all of our students are confronted with. They say, how can I get a job without experience?
It's a real issue.
But then how can I get experience without a job?
Right.
I mean, that's the problem. It's the age-old question. What comes first, the job or the experience? And we help all of our students walk through this thing. It's the classic chicken and the egg problem. What mm-hmm. came first, the chicken or the egg? Now, what we decided to do was actually to interview a chicken to find out if we can do that.
How did he get his job?
Yeah. Okay. We'd like to interview this chicken now. Which came first here, the chicken or the egg? You know, in our pre-production meeting, we were supposed to have the talking chickens. Willie, it's not about the rooster. It's not which came first, the rooster or the hen. It's what came first, the chicken or the egg. It's not about the rooster.
Willie's already fallen down
on
the job.
Okay, Willie, listen, we spent 3 hours in this pre-production meeting yesterday, and they're supposed to be the talking chickens. Okay, open up the door and get these chickens out of here.
I'll tell you.
Okay, Willie.
Willie is just going to be a problem, isn't he?
Willie is a problem. Yeah, these are supposed to be the talking. Okay,
I'm kicking him out now.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Oh, well, that's
goodbye, Willie.
Well, the thing about getting a job, everybody says, I need to get a job. I need to get experience before I can get a job. And you know what people forget about? The experience that you have to get does not have to be paid experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be like somebody who wanted to drive a bus, and they decide that they go and they apply to drive a bus, and they say, well, how are you going to learn to drive? I say, well, I'm going to get behind your bus, and I'm going to learn to drive driving the bus. You have to know how to drive before you can drive a bus, so you sort of teach yourself, or you drive a car. So what you do is you actually have to learn something in an unpaid way. And so the way to do that is there's really kind of a five-step way that we recommend doing it with all of our students, and this has worked for years. Number one, you want to have a good idea of where the field is going. What's hot now? So you know what's worth learning. And you do that by reading what I call the industry rags. These are all free magazines. You sign up for them. You can get like 6 or 8 or 10 of them come into your house each week. And you see what's the latest thing, what the vendors are putting out, the latest product. And you know what is worth learning. What are the current trends? Second, you want to have a good idea of what of you want to get some develop some good competencies that are going to be demanded by industry, either by, you know, it can be Linux, install Linux operating systems, install Windows operating systems, and I've got a number of ways you can do that at home, just in your own spare time, or you can go to a school like Stratford University and you can learn networking, you can develop core competencies. The third thing, you want to really understand the standards and the procedures in the industry, and I've got a few examples of that, like the Internet standards are all standardized by IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force, or the wireless standards are all standardized by the 802.dot committee at IEEE, and I've got a whole series of links. If you understand those standards, you can be very, very conversant. You should really get a very well-written resume that emphasizes where you're going rather than what you've been. You don't want to have resume lock. I mean, if you sit here and been doing task A, you're in the past, you write a resume defining task A, you're locked into task A. If you want to do task B, you write something about what you are going to be doing.
Focus on what it is you're trying to do.
Focus what you want to be doing. And then you want to join user groups and trade associations. You don't want to make the mistake of asking for a job at these meetings. There are a lot of user groups, like there's Linux user group, Oracle user groups, a wide number of users. You can go there and you can work on projects.
And, you know, going back to resumes, mm-hmm. one of my pet peeves, and having looked at more than a few over my career, mm-hmm. run it through spell check.
Oh, that's a good idea. There's no doubt about that.
How about length of resumes? I heard that everything should fit on one page or two tops.
Yeah, I think a short resume is better. Yeah.
And again, with so much experience, you've got to weed things out. Again, focus on what it is you're going for.
That's right. You've got to focus, and you've got to have a good sense of what you would like to do and how you'd like to do it. Now, I'm going to have posted to the Tech Talk website all of the standards organizations like World Wide Web Consortium, XML Portal, Industry Portal, the NIST IT Lab, the 802 LAN Committee, the MFA Forum, that's the ATM forum, all of these standard groups, I'm going to have those posted to the web, all the links to about 8 industry rags. I also have links to about 10 user groups in that thing. But the two things that I want to kind of emphasize here, I jump to the end here, you want to do something at home. You want to actually work on a project that makes sense. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about home project number one, which was a series of backtrack tools. These are the 300 top tools used for hacking, and you can download that from remoteexploit.org, and you can make a CD, and it'll boot up in Linux, and you can play around with that. Did you ever have a chance to play with that yet, Naveed?
I had a hard time trying to convince people that it was okay for me to use that CD on their system, and
and so the answer would be no.
Well, it is a nice, it boots up in Linux, and you can play around with these systems and you can learn something.
Thank you for listening. This has been the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. We return with a live show next Saturday here on Federal News Radio. Please join us then.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Registration's now open for the 5th annual Old Town Doggy Walk to be held on Sunday, September 25th. This year's course takes in many of Old Town's famous sites with a start and finish at Market Square on King Street. All proceeds from the walk benefit the furry, finned, and feathered residents of the Animal Welfare League of Alexandria. Registration costs $25 and includes a t-shirt and bandana. Online registration closes September 23rd, so be sure to enter today. To register or learn more, visit doggywalk.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those